Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stormkeep. My name is Paul, and today I'm joined by...
Hey, it's Dan.
Hey, it's Cody.
Hey, this is Morgonk.
Today we will be talking about why you should use Dracolines. They are a fantastic little unit. We are all really big fans of Dracolines this season. Their unique combination of speed, damage, and utility puts them in a different role than other units that we have in our army, and they are filling that role very well.
Alrighty, starting things off, we got to shout out our awesome friends over at Kaiju Gaming Lounge. Carl and the gang are awesome supporters of us. They give us our prize support for all those cool painting contests, which, by the way, there is one right now for Evocators. If you want to go ahead and paint up some Evocators or Evocators on Dracolines, which we're talking about today, go ahead and check out our Discord. We'll have information there you can post, and you can have a chance to win some prizes. So you can check that out in our Discord. But if you do use code Stormkeep on Kaiju's website, you do get 15% off, which is pretty cool. If you're an international viewer and you want to order from Kaiju, we'll need to go ahead and talk to Carl in our Discord. You literally just at Carl. He'll come up under Kaiju and he'll help you out. But they do carry our awesome merch, which is our Deep Strike sticks. We got a 9-inch and 7-inch stick, which is perfect for just like in the picture there, deep striking those annihilators. Or if you play Beast of Chaos, you know, you can bring in your guys with a 7-inch. And then a 9-inch for general use. You know, it's a really good stick. Like, and they come in several colors. You can even order them with the framing still on there, basically like the sticker. You can spray paint them or paint them your own colors and peel it off, and boom, you got your own custom stick too. So they're pretty cool. And as well as our dice you see there, which are super special, awesome. So check them out.
So I guess to try to convince you to use Dracolines, we should answer the question, why not just use Fulminators instead? They are very similar units, both of them being cavalry melee hammers, and they cost the same amount of points, and they are very similar. However, they fulfill different roles on the battlefield. Fulminators want to be fighting big threats in the middle of the field. Dracolines want to be fighting softer targets on the flanks, and we'll go over the reasons for why that is exactly. But basically, Fulminators are the line breakers, while Dracolines are the harassers. Dracolines are kind of like a Stormstrike Chariot, but they deal a lot more damage, and they have a little bit of a worse save.
Yeah, they're kind of like Chariot Plus, right? Like, you're not... Obviously, they're not going to fit in the same point slot as Chariots, but sometimes you find yourself in the spot, you know, you've saved some points, you've taken the Night Relictor, you've, you know, maybe not the Night Relictor, but you've, you know, moved those Vindictors or Sequiturs down to Vanquishers, and you've got some points floating around, and you can upgrade here, and it's quite a difference. It's definitely worth the extra 70 points. It's a lot, but it's really good.
At 240, there's a choice between two Fulminators, three Dracolines, or a Stormstrike Chariot and three Aether Wings. And these days, I'm personally preferring the Dracolines. Fulminators want to be save stacking. You know, because they have a 3-up save, they can get to a 2-up save and ignore Rend 1, Rend 2, and always be saving on a 2+. So you want to give them a whole bunch of defensive buffs and throw them down the middle of the field. However, Dracolines are better served harassing flanks because they... Dracolines are better off as a riposte unit because they don't need to charge in order to deal damage. So if they start combat phase within 3 inches of an enemy, if they charge into your lines and you just counter pile in with them, they're going to do their maximum damage the whole time. And you can use both in the same list. We're going to make a case for you to consider using two Fulminators and three Dracolines together in the same list. They're a self-sufficient unit that does not require any support from the rest of your list. You can just plop them into your list, the last 240 points, or, you know, if you have 260, something like that, you can fill the last 240 with Dracolines. As you can see in the table on the left, Fulminators and Dracolines are very similar units. They're both 240 points. Dracolines have one more model. They have three more wounds. They have a worse save, but they are faster. They are a wizard, and they get to reroll charges. The main difference, I would say, is that Fulminators want to be reinforced, or at least they can be reinforced. Evocators struggle with this because they only have 1-inch range, and because as soon as you reach 6 models in a unit, you have to deal with fighting in 2 ranks, which is a very awkward rule in Age of Sigmar 3rd Edition. Fulminators don't have to deal with that problem because they're only 2 models in a squad. So when you reinforce them, they go up to 4, and they can fight, all 4 of them get to fight, and it's great.
Yeah, even outside of, I think, Cody, you run them in your cities list, right? Your Tempest Eye list over Fulminators? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fulminators just fill a different role. And it's exactly like you said, they are just value in a bundle. And you think about the hybridization of this unit. It's a wizard. It's high mobility. It's reasonable damage in different settings. Like, it's not high rend, but they also have the mortals. So they can scratch the paint on any target you throw them at. They're a great counter skirmishing unit. They're a great flanking unit. especially in Tempest Eye, where they get that extra movement, that extra save turn one. They're a great amount of reach out and touch someone that takes enough investment to peel that they have to commit to it when it's not the unit they want to be committing to. So they're almost the distraction Karnifex for me. They're going to go off and do their thing, and you're either going to deal with them, or I'm going to have 240 points holding an objective, you know, here or there, whenever I need to.
The plus one save bonus from Tempest Eye is really, really big. Going from 4 up to 3 up seems like a 33% increase in durability, but it's actually a lot more than that because you're reducing the amount of failed saves from 3 and 6 down to 2 and 6, which means you're actually increasing your effective health by a lot. It's a lot more than 33%. You are actually increasing your effective health by 50%. But then, you know, there's rend values and things like that. So it's not exactly like getting a 5-up ward, but it's similar.
And in terms of Tempest Eye, just that extra little oomph, because, I mean, at that point, you know, you can all out defense them, you can do whatever else you want to do. It causes your opponent to overcommit to them. In some, like, Fulminators, people are going to commit to every day. They want them off the board because they know what they can do. Evocators? You know, not so much. They don't know what they can do. They don't want to commit the extra resources to them. And if they don't, they're not going to kill them. And even if they leave one left, that's still a fast kitty cat that can take an objective. I think that's really what it boils down to, is just recursive value. They, you know, they're extra wizard. They reroll their own charges, which is just extra value. You don't have to worry about having that command point when they go for their charge. You get the reroll anyway. So they're just a bundle of good value. Multi-types of damage, high, you know, movement, decent wound brick. Just they do a lot of stuff well.
You know, we're kind of jumping the gun here. Let's discuss this fairly exhaustive list of pros and cons. I'm sure there's extra things on here that I didn't even put on these slides that we can talk about. But first off, Dracolines are fast. They're a 12-inch move, and they've rerolled charges natively. And there's two really good things about that. First off is that 10-inch move doesn't feel like enough sometimes. Even though this season we're still fighting stuff in the middle, sometimes you don't necessarily want to deploy your unit all the way up to the front of scrimmage. You want to put it behind a screen, and those extra 2 inches basically offset that. And then 10-inch move, you can get maybe, you know, within 7 or 8 inches of something, and then they'll redeploy, and they might get like a 4 or 5, and that's like the worst thing ever, because you've just increased your charge up to something very difficult or maybe even impossible. The ability to reroll charges is also very nice, because you can issue forward to victory on another unit that's charging in to have 2 rerollable charges, or you can just not use a command point and be more efficient that way. Here you can see a damage table that we generated using Stats Hammer. You can see the link there at the bottom of the slide. This damage table assumes no buffs whatsoever. So you will not have plus one hit or even plus one to wound, even though Dracolines do bring their own plus one to wound. We just assume the cast didn't get off. And we compared Dracolines fighting all the time. They don't need to charge to get a bonus. We compared that to Fulminators without charging bonuses and then Fulminators with the charging bonuses. And you can see that Dracolines do a lot of damage. They do comparable damage to Fulminators on the charge, which, if you've played Stormcast in 3rd edition or played against Stormcast, you know how good Fulminators are. This is just demonstrating just how good Dracolines are. They're almost doing the same amount of damage against all targets.
Yeah, it's funny that the Fulminators, the most that they're, or I guess the most discrepancy they have to pull ahead of the Dracolines is that 4-up save, right? Even at a 2-up, like I talked about earlier, the mortal wounds are actually helping carry the unit just a little bit over Fulminators, right? Like, it's not significant, but it is over, right? Like, you're well within a wound on most of these, and at most with a 4-up save, it's like a wound and a half on average. So it's and more than that, if it's like a 6-up save, now it's swinging back to the Dracolines. So this is a really cool unit in how the damage distribution is done.
Yeah, and another interesting thing to note is that as you get into like 2-up save with ignoring rend 1, ignoring rend 2, because you have so many save bonuses, the Dracolines actually loop back around and become better than the Fulminators, even if the Fulminators charge, just because the mortal wounds are so potent against a 2-up save ignoring all rend. So back to the pros and cons, you can see Dracolines do really good damage, like Fulminator level damage. And in fact, when they're not charging, the Dracolines do a lot more. Their high volume of attacks allows you to reliably clear softer screens. This is a problem a lot with Stormcast lists, is that you overcommit resources or you undercommit, and because of bad dice rolls, you don't clear something. So you end up overcommitting pretty much all the time. Like, you'll send 6 long strike shots into a screen just to make sure that screen is dead, because you need it out of the way for your tactical purposes. and their high volume attacks on the evocators help kind of offset that randomness that can occur. It's a big difference. You know, a couple dice, bad dice rolls when you're rolling 12 dice is very different when you're rolling, you know, 20 dice. The Lightning Arc in particular is also really nice for this purpose, not just because it helps you punch through high defense units like 2-up saves and things like that, but it also happens after you attack, so you can avoid wasting damage on overkill. So let's say you're fighting two different units, you put all of your, you kind of split your attacks up because you're such a big unit, you're fighting stuff. Depending on how well the combats go, you can be like, oh, well, this unit is pretty close to being finished off. I can put all of my Lightning Arc damage into that unit, which is a really cool piece of utility. When you combine their speed and their power, you get a really good unit to harass flanks and objectives, something that you can't really do with anything else in our book. Units like Prosecutors are fast, but they're not punchy. Units like Fulminators aren't quite fast enough, and their damage output is better spent somewhere else because you want to reinforce them and stack buffs on them. Stormdrake Guard are fast, but they're more durable than they are punchy, so they don't quite fit this role, and they're very expensive. So Dracolines have a very cool niche carved out for themselves.
Yeah. So the other thing on top of that is, so this combination, right, you have a combination of speed and power. And it's not, you know, not something that you typically want to reinforce. It's going to be faster, though. It's going to be more, you know, maneuverable, which is perfect for your flanks, right? A lot of these new objectives, especially if you look at a position over power, you know, you're having to head off to the sides of the board, and you really want to have something that can actually reach out there and, like Cody said, reach out and touch something. So a 12-inch move combined with that reroll charge, combined with not even having to charge, right? If you get out there and you kill a screen and you're stuck on a pseudo tanky hero, they're going to still keep doing their max damage, right? Like, there's other options for them that Fulminators don't necessarily have access to. Fulminators kind of want, you know, investment because they just scale better with investment. So they're just, they really shine on that flank. The other thing is, along with being on that flank, a lot of times your flanks is where you want to deny space. I see this a lot, like, especially when I'm using like dragons in a min unit, I really like their 3-inch coherency, their large base for, you know, covering out, you know, blocking things out. These three models, sometimes, you know, you have to take up a lane, and this being your side unit that you're, you know, you care about it, but you don't care about it maybe as much as your main hammer, obviously. You can really spread them out and deny a ton of space and really be like, hey, do you really want to come deal with this? Waste a whole turn, potentially, you know, if there's a double turn situation, be stuck there. There's a lot that goes into the mind games here, and they're just super tactically flexible because of that. On top of that, the other combination in there, speed, power, you've got utility, right? These are wizards. It's a wizard unit. So while the whole unit is a wizard, you know, they have a bigger unbind, I guess, area than, you know, a knight encanter, right? He's a little 40 millimeter base. These guys are the three cavalry bases, right? So you can go ahead and stretch them out, and they can really they can deny more wizard area, you know, to unbind. So that's really nice. They bring their own buff, so it doesn't take up celestial blades. They're a little self-sufficient, though they don't really scale as well as Fulminators do with that plus one to wound buff. It's free, right? Like, you're not doing anything else with them. You can't cast Mystic Shield on their own. You know, they can literally only cast in power, so you just do it. You just go for it. So that's a super nice bonus. And yeah, if you got one model within 1 inch of Arcane Terrain, the whole thing's got plus one to cast and unbind. And that's another, you know, really strong thing. This is a fast unit. If someone, depending on your terrain pack, if someone has Arcane Terrain, you know, towards the middle of the board, you can get up there and threaten there to unbind something against an army that really cares. You know, sometimes your Knight Encanter isn't in range for, if they're not running tech lists, maybe they're not in range to unbind the 5 of Ward from Lumineth, the Protection of Hish. And then you have to, you know, they give you the first turn because they're one drop. You can run up and attempt to deny just that little bit better. It's little things and little points of efficiency that put these Dracolines over, I think, Fulminators in as a min unit.
Yeah, there's definitely problems running this unit in squads of six because you lose two models to cohesion when you're attacking. You do get the full lightning arc, which is nice, but I think running 2x3 is probably the way to go. That way you get an extra unbind, you get more coverage, and even then I don't know if I'd use 2x3. It seems like a single squad of three is the way to go.
Yeah.
Min units, absolutely. For sure, but you know, getting them up to the higher units, we're talking min units today, but getting them to that higher unit size can actually give you some decent crack with that lightning arc and allow them to punch way out of their weight class on targets, you know, that might be hard armored. But the wizard keyword is really what intrigues me and what actually calls me to start thinking about them for Tempest Eye. you know, they can't cast it themselves, but Laocoon, you know, the boatman, allows you to pick him up and put somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely something I didn't mention on the slides here. Laocoon is an, for those who aren't aware, he is an endless spell that allows you to move a wizard effectively in the hero phase and then move normally in the normal movement phase. So you can, for example, teleport a unit of 3 Dracolines 18 inches with Laocoon and then move 12 inches, giving you a tremendous threat range that, like, nothing is safe from melee combat against that. When you add in the rerollable charge, sometimes you can get even longer threat ranges. It's crazy. And that combo works because Laocoon doesn't specify wizard hero or a single model that it's a wizard. It specifies wizard keyword. So as long as you have at least 2 Dracolines in the unit, they count as a wizard and they can use Laocoon.
So on a map, one of my test games, we were playing on Nidus Paths, and I just had them in that back corner with a wizard who could cast Laocoon, and just they were a threat that could be anywhere on the board at any time whenever they needed to be. And it's spectacular. That kind of mobility, they can be counterpunch for me if somebody gets in my lines. If somebody leaves me a valid target, we can leap at it. Just the amount of mobility that you get from these guys, the options open up by them just having that wizard keyword is really incredible versatility.
And then to top it all off, the Evocators can just dispel Laocoon the following turn in case, like, you can't get it quite into the right range. You can dispel it for free during your opponent's turn, and then one of your wizards can recast it after translocating into range next to the Evocators. It's really, really cool.
And it's also a great escape plan, too, because Laocoon, when it moves, it takes the wizards with them. It doesn't really matter. You can use that to get them out of harm's way, to get them somewhere else. It requires a little bit of setup, but, you know, if your opponent's about to, you know, they're positioning to hit a target, they're positioning to actually hit those guys, maybe the only way they can get on that particular objective is to actually charge your Dracolines, and then, you know, the boatman just takes them on a merry little ride across the board somewhere else where they're now a threat somewhere else. It's an excellent piece of utility.
Yeah. It depends. Yeah, I especially like that point, Cody, because especially if you're going second and you can threaten the double, it's kind of an extra utility, right? If they don't have as strong of wizards, you're pretty sure they can't unbind Laocoon, which is a bit of a higher casting value. I think it's an 8, right, to cast Laocoon?
Pretty high, yeah.
Yeah. It's six. Okay, it's not so bad. But even then, like, that's still, you know, that's still something they have to roll against. You can really, you know, take the gamble, and at worst, you know, if they're off on the side, they're just going to go in the next turn, and if not, you know, you can either get them out, reposition, or they'll spend, you know, an unbind on that. So that's something to think about.
As I mentioned before, you don't have to charge with Evocators to get their full damage. So they're a fantastic, like, counterattack, riposte-type unit, where you keep them just within 3 inches of the front line of where enemies can charge. So, like, 2.5 inches from the front of your models. That way they have to finish a charge in range for Evocators to hit them. And because they're such a wide unit, you know, physically wide, you can cover a lot of space with them, and it's really, really hard to avoid pulling them into combat. And once they are in combat, only one model in the unit needs to be within 3 inches in order to unleash the full lightning arc from the whole unit. So you take all 9 dice and you dump it into one model within 3 inches of anyone in the unit. It's really, really good. Because of their damage profile, they're great for counterattacking, but they're also good as a supporting charge unit. For example, if you want to cover a flank when your Dracolines when your Fulminators charge in, you can put some Dracolines just beside them to limit the amount of space that your opponent can pile in against your Fulminators. Yeah, your Dracolines are going to take hits, but that's less damage being taken by the unit you really care about. Like, this is a, you know, 240-point throwaway unit. Not necessarily throwaway, but, like, tactically you're okay with losing it if there's a greater goal of protecting your Fulminators. And this is very much the same role that Chariots fill.
Yeah, similar to literally, like, just doing what the Chariot was doing for us. So it's, you know, while Chariot still has its place, Dracolines are 100% a worthy consideration because of that. I do like the 15 wounds on them, too. Because, you know, we're starting to see a little bit more mortal wound spreader. I mean, like, the Slaanesh book just dropped. So, you know, you'll have mortal wounds just kind of randomly popping around places. So that extra mortal wound buffer of health, because that's really the only way you can stop mortal wounds, in case you haven't watched our video on wounds and mortal wounds. It's health, right? Health has the buffer for that. So it's pretty nice if you've got them in a castle with Gardas. It's, again, just a little bit more value. Just little things that they do that aren't necessarily, like, head and shoulders above Fulminators, but it is a bonus, right? Like, you've got to look at the whole package when you're comparing the two.
I really like their wizard utility. I often sometimes find myself lacking unbinds, so having an extra unbind is pretty cool. And yeah, mortal wounds are pretty nice. What I really like about them is people really love hiding their Galatian champions within an inch of things now to prevent them from being shot. And that's better for Dracolines because you can easily just delete a screen with the attacks and then touch something with mortal wounds and kill it. So oftentimes produce like a 2-for-1 value on for you on the board, which is something Fulminators can't necessarily do.
I like that point about the arcane terrain too, though. Because yeah, you don't generally want to pay that many points for a wizard that has no bonuses, but the ability to put 1 inch within an arcane terrain feature and spread them out gives you a huge bubble of +1, to dispel. And that's, I mean, these are utility pieces. They're who we're talking about. They're a hybridized unit that can do a lot of different roles. And if you really need them one match just to be the thing that's in unbind range with a bonus, they can do that job just fine.
They might not do it every time. They might not unbind that, Deep Thinker's Protection of Hish. But that one time that they do, the couple times they do more often than another wizard would, that's going to matter, right?
Now we're talking up Dracolines like they're, the second coming of Christ over here. But there's definitely downsides, right? They're not a perfect unit. They fill a very specific role. They do it very, very well, and it's really exciting and it's fun to use them because of that. But we got to go over the downsides as well. I'd say one of the main ones is that they are never battle line. No matter which storm host you pick, no matter what general you pick, you just can't make Dracolines battle line. And that inherently makes them an inefficient unit compared to something like Fulminators and Hammers of Sigmar, or Retributors even in Knights Excelsior. Annihilators with Grand Hammers can be battle line in Knights Excelsior. There's just no way to make this unit into a battle line unit, and that's awkward. So that this is more of like, I've got 300 points left, I've got 250 points left. How do I fill those slots in a list? Or I need something fast and punchy, or I don't have enough unbinding in my list, and I'm just going to get rolled over by magic, and I'd like to have some chance against it. That's more of where Dracolines come in. So you can't just spam a list with them. And that's all downstream of the fact that they're not battle line. They have low rend, so they can really struggle to fight armored targets. I know that the Lightning Arc is good against that, but man, sometimes it feels bad to fight like 2-up save knights and just bounce off them constantly. It can be very frustrating if you don't deny that Mystic Shield, or if they have extra command points for all of defense, like if you're not pressuring them in other parts of the board. They have definitely the biggest weakness of this unit is that they can't fight well reinforced, and 3 models is just not enough to take down the toughest targets. Like you can't send 3 Dracolines in to take down a Gargant or to take down 30 Bladegeist Revenants. They're just not going to do it. Unfortunately, because they can't fight well reinforced, that's kind of their limit. They're stuck being this like medium damage hammer unit. They're not quite a heavy hammer. They're not quite a light hammer either. They're somewhere in the middle, and it hasn't been obvious where that niche is or how useful that niche is. And finally, their 4-up save does really make them vulnerable to other hammers. If you get hit by something like Chaos Chosen, maybe a block of 4 Fulminators can survive that, especially if you position units around them and you have save stacking going on. That's fine. Evocators on Dracolines are not going to survive against heavier units. Maybe if they were reinforced, they could, and then they'd be worth save stacking on and then dropping a Gardas next to them because they'd be a lot of wounds and a lot of save bonuses. But because they can't reinforce, they're not really worth buffing defensively, and that makes the 4-up save kind of a liability. Like it's usually fine because they're not going to be fighting things that are, super heavy hitters. People aren't generally sending Ren 2 into these guys because, frankly, that's a waste of resources. Those attacks should be going into other units. So the 4-up save doesn't matter as much as you think it does. All right, so I thought we would round this video out by looking at different lists that we use in our Lords of the Storm episode number 6. You may have noticed that there's a lot of Evocators on Dracolines in those, and I wanted to go through some of the inclusions and discuss why we included them and what they were kind of doing in that list. So this one here is called It's Hammer Time. It's based around using 10 Retributors in Galician Veterans so that they can fight 2 ranks finally, and teleporting them around with Translocation and Wild Form, hopefully to land some 7-inch rerollable charges. But this list is incredibly slow, and that's kind of what the Dracolines are doing in here. Not only are they a secondary hammer for the Retributors so that you can, punch 2 things in 2 different spots, Dracolines can play flanks very well, but they're also just a fast unit. And if you look at the movement characteristic on this list, it's very slow. This list is relying on shooting and very little movement, so just having a fast hammer unit really helps offset that weakness. I think the Dracolines here make this a 2 in movement instead of a 1. Here you can see a game using that list against Iron Jaws. I deployed in such a way that because I knew my opponent had a battle regiment, they had fewer drops, so they got to choose to go first or second. I positioned very defensively here in a castle formation with my vanquishers up front and retributors ready to riposte after they're wiped out, and the Dracolines off to the side. This positioning was very favorable to me because it allowed me to split his army and leave him with basically nothing aside from what he would charge in with. And he took the bait. He took the first turn and charged in with a Mock Russia and 18 pigs total. And I was able to, I lost all my screens. I lost my two units of Vanquishers. I lost my Aether Wings. My Retributors were able to punch through, and then the Dracolines were able to charge in and help wipe stuff out after that. If he allowed me to go first here, I would have translocated my Retributors up and gotten everything within 12 inches up, so his Mighty Destroyers would be basically worthless. It was the right choice, I think, for him to go first in this case, but it did leave him in a very poor position. And the Dracolines, I think, are what sealed the deal here. Being off on their own, it allowed them to either come in and help wipe out the, depending on how much he committed to the initial engagement, it would allow them to either come in and help clean that up or to send them out and charge something else across the table. In this case, since he committed all three of his hammer units of pigs, the Dracolines ended up coming in and clearing stuff out. In the Dracolith Blizzard list, you will notice that there is a unit of four Fulminators and three Evocators on Dracolines. This is because this list wants to move the Fulminators with a Phoenix, Castellant, Relictor, Battle Mage, and Crossbows, move them all into the middle of the board, maybe even force the opponent to go first and then engage on top of them. And the problem with that tactically is that that leaves you very little aside from that engagement, because all of these pieces are there to support the Fulminators. The Crossbows are there to wipe out screens. Castellant and Relictor are there to buff up the Fulminators as well. Frostheart Phoenix exists there just to support the Fulminator charges with roars and with the -1 wound thing, keeping them alive longer. And all that's left then would be two units of five Sequiturs, which you'll probably have to use as screens, frankly. And then you need something fast to contest objectives. And a Stormstrike Chariot, you know, that could fit in this list. But then you would not have enough punching power to get through on other objectives. So this is a kind of list that you don't want to split your forces up. And then the Evocators are the thing that can split off and do things on their own. So that's how they fit very nicely into this particular style. In the Golden Tempest list, you'll see there are no Fulminators in this list. In fact, there is no primary melee hammer here at all, because what this list is trying to do is to teleport six Tempesters up the middle of the board, give them a whole bunch of save bonuses, and just shoot everything to death. And because the Tempesters are also decent in combat, they're not great, but they're decent in combat, if the opponent tries to engage into you, you will be able to bite your way out of that combat and then move around and shooting stuff. So this is kind of a similar style to like using a block of four Stormdrakes, putting them in the middle with a bunch of defenses. But unlike that, the Tempesters can shoot, so you can't just ignore them. You can't walk around them. They're going to be doing damage every single turn, even if you don't charge into them. And if you do charge into them, well, you're going to have a tough time chewing through that many wounds on a zero plus save, potentially. The Dracolines in this case are a crucial speed piece that can support you on flanks. Because you have all your eggs in this Tempester basket, you really do need a second unit that can go out and contest things. This list needs some changes, I think. I've been playing it and playtesting it, and I'm not sure if only having two different units that can go out and do things is enough. But the Dracolines definitely feel very, very good in this list, that's for sure. They play a crucial role as a harassing flank contester. They can reach the things that the Tempesters can't or ideally don't want to reach, because you want them sitting more or less in the middle of the board, kind of just swaying back and forth between the central objectives.
Yeah, I think originally when we were trying to come up with this list, I think you had two Chariots here, and we had the points for the Dracolines, and it was like, well, I don't really want the Aether Wings, do I? And this was that same scenario, I think.
Yeah, in this list, I also found it beneficial to cut the two Chariots and Aether Wings because it reduced the drops. I was able to fit more things in the Battle Regiment, and this list really does want to go Battle Regiment. It wants as few drops as possible so that if you want to take the first turn, you maybe have that option, or if you want to force your opponent to take the first turn, you also want that option. Six Tempesters are just not the highest threat range. Even if you translocate them, they only shoot 12 inches after that, so they're limited in what they can hit. Next up is your Dueling Dragons list, Daniel, so take us away.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I was super excited about when I first saw this the reduction in points down to 240. I immediately wanted to slap the ban alongside dragons. Dragons being a 12-inch move, being that quick threat, it just fits perfectly with what evocators are trying to do. My dragons are going to be taking up that reroll charge roll sometimes. I mean, they have their own inherent once per game, but sometimes you want to, save that if you've got the command points. It allows the Dracolines to really shine as they don't take up a command point. It adds me another unbind. While dragons do ignore spells on a 4-up, you still want to unbind those buffs, right? Because dragons can't ignore buffs. So they bring a whole another unbind to the list. They like I said, the speed, the whole like them being able to be their own package, right? Like, it's just like with the other list Paul talked about, the Stardrake Guard, the Castellan, the Judicators dropping down in their area. I'm making a small castle. The Dracolines are off doing their own thing, right? They're going to do whatever they want to do. Sometimes I am going to put, a castle buff on them, maybe if I know like some light shooting is going to try to come at them, and I can split buffs here. But sometimes I'm going all in on the Stormdrake Guard, and those Dracolines are off on their own, and they're going to still perform, which is what I really need them for. The other defining feature of the Dueling Dragon style, or dragons in general, is sometimes you just forego a Relictor, right? Like, dragons just move so quickly that you don't really need the Relictor. It's attacks. You want to take the Castellan, just because Stormdrake Guard costs so much. You can't really afford the Relictor. So the Evocators being quick on their own is another bonus, just because of that, right? They need to be self-sufficient, and this list definitely relies on them to be self-sufficient. So this was my favorite inclusion because this was running a Fulminator before. Like that's what it was. It was a min Fulminator in that slot. And as soon as I was able to slot these in, I was so excited to do so.
This list is called 9L because it uses 9 Long Strike Raptors. You could substitute something like, 10 Crossbow Judicators in for some of the shooting units. But the basic idea here is that you don't have a proper melee hammer unit. You don't have anything reinforced that can just obliterate something. The idea here is you've got two different melee hammer units, softer melee hammers, like three Evocators on Dracolines and two Fulminators. And then the shooting kind of adds that damage where you need it to be. That way, you're not overcommitting resources in any particular spot on the board, and as long as you can protect your shooting, it seems like this concept is working pretty well. So here you can see a game I played using this list against the Cabalist subfaction in Slaves to Darkness. This photo that you're seeing now is after my first hero phase. You can see the Geminids were cast. I was translocating my Vanquishers up to deny space, but basically my opponent deployed with a battle regiment. I was able to counter deploy. And force him into a situation where if he let me go first, he would avoid the double turn for sure. But if he let me go first, none of his heroes would be left on the board because I have sharpshooters. The only hero left would be the Chaos Lord, who has a retinue of 10 Chaos Warriors. So being Cabalus, he wants to get a lot of value out of his drawn power and cast Mystic Shield on his hammer units to survive against my hammer units. So he opted to take the first turn, and he put his knights on the left side, and his Chaos Warriors on the right side, two very durable units. I believe the Warriors were marked Nurgle. And I was able to counter-deploy my Evocators on the left side, along with some Terror Wings to potentially scream at them and deny them some commands. And I left six Longstrike Raptors in reserve. Here, the arrows are kind of indicating the flow of what happened the following, like during my turn. I moved my Evocators up on the western flank, and I was able to charge in and just to minimize the pile-in for the knights. I put my Terror Wings on the right side of the knight so that when he did go to pile-in, the knights would have to go towards the Terror Wings and split the unit, and thus, take even less damage on my Evocators. The Geminids were able to move up and tag a bunch of units to prevent redeploying, so his champion could not get on the objective, because this is on the battle plan where only champion, if a champion is on an objective, then only champions can contest it. And my Fulminators charged in the flank of the Nurgle Warriors on the side, to tie them up, allowing me to just walk a champion onto the objective and take it. From there, I dropped in my unit of six long strikes. I decided to snipe out the general, which is the Demon Prince you see in the back there, because I know Slaves to Darkness really, really wants command points, and being able to kill the general denies them a command point every single turn. So as you can see in the resulting photo, I did win the double turn, which is one of the gambles my opponent took when he gave himself the first round. Over two turns of combat, my Evocators were able to destroy all but one of the Chaos Knights. They just kept making that Battleshock roll successfully. And I put very minimal shooting in there. because I had dropped down my six long strikes where you could see them in the middle, just in line of sight of a Chaos Sorcerer Lord that was hiding behind the building. And I put three. I had to put additional shots into the Demon Prince because my long strikes rolled low on Thunderbolt Volley and three shots. So very little shooting power went into the Chaos Knights on the left. I think they took out maybe two of the Knights, and the Evocators took out the rest over two turns of combat and lost nothing in return, which was great. And then even once the Ogroids were able to charge in on my opponent's turn, I was still able to have one Evocator with one wound remaining, and he was still able to contest the objective, which felt great. So this battle showed off that even up against a two-up save like Chaos Knights using all-out defense, Evocators were still chunking away at them, doing significant damage, tying down my opponent's resources. And after his general was dead, he just didn't have any command points left for the rest of the game, and his units were not fighting very efficiently.
Heck yeah. And I can tell here, like, you probably started your activations with the Fulminators, right? And then the, you know, the Dracolines, he had to hit your Fulminators back, right? Like, that was kind of what you were going for?
Well, actually, in this case, I was fighting with the Evocators first because I knew the Fulminators would be okay. They had Mystic Shield from a previous turn, and they could always all out defense to be saving out twos against a Ren 1 attacker like the Chaos Warriors.
Okay.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you to all our viewers, and especially to our patron supporters. If you think we missed anything or our analysis is lacking in any way, then please leave us a comment down below the video.
Even better, if you want to interact with us all the time and a bit more directly, please join our Discord. We love to talk, just talk AOS all the time. Our community is really awesome. I don't even know how like we fostered a community like this, but they talk so analytically. They talk so, you know, just so focused on getting good games in, sharing their experiences. The Battle Reports channel is my favorite channel in the Discord. So I go in there every day and I see you guys out there, you know, putting models on the board and using some of the things that we've showcased. And even better, I get to learn some new stuff from you guys and your battle reports, get new info that I didn't know. And that's just awesome. Thank you guys so much for sharing the battle reports. You know, we got a hobby section, post your models. We do our contests like we talked about. So check that out. That's at the top of the Discord once you join.
Yeah, our Evocator painting contest is going on right now. So if you have a unit of five Evocators or three Evocators and Dracolines, maybe from a previous edition, or you just are a very quick painter, feel free to drop them in the Discord before the contest ends.
And that ends on the 31st, so that's ending soon. But yeah, if you like our stuff, also consider becoming a member on YouTube or supporting us on Patreon. We don't usually talk about it too much. We use that to, you know, help get our stuff improved our equipment. We got a new mic from Mergonk, so he sounds a lot better. Just, you know, little things. We really appreciate it, guys.
In terms of upcoming podcast episodes, we've got the Battle Tome review for Blades of Khorne. You know, it's we're thinking about doing a Slaanesh review, but it just, there's something about that book. Doesn't look great. It's not very exciting.
I might put down a rapid fire review for that. Yeah, but if you want to put it in the comments, I'll put down like rapid fire review. This is what they're going to play. This is what you should be afraid of. Boom.
Yeah, it didn't seem as deep as the Khorne book is really the biggest reason. I think the army is probably still fine, but you know.
I think it's, yeah, I can totally put together a rapid fire review, but yeah, it revolves around like three units and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of them isn't even in the book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Sort of isn't, but yeah, one of the main units that this army wants to take isn't even in the book. Yeah.
The Khorne book, on the other hand, we are very, very excited about. So look forward to that. It's going to be a longer one, 5 or 6 hours, I think, and we're going to go very in-depth like we do usually with our battle term reviews. We also have our long-awaited How to Counter Tzeentch video coming. There's been some scheduling conflicts because we have a very special guest coming on, arguably the best Tzeentch player in the world, Caleb Walters, fresh off his best overall performance at Adepticon 5-0 and Golden Ticket. So he's going to come on and he's going to be literally a magician that is revealing his secrets about how to counter his army.
Yeah, after he's done winning, maybe, you know, before the battle scroll. But
hey man, he didn't need it anymore. He's good. He made his point.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
He was already the best Tzeentch player in the world, man. Come on.
Yeah. He didn't need the new book, you know, honestly. But oh man.
We also have the first of our list spotlight videos with the beginner competitive list. This is the one we received the most requests for. So we'll be going over how we formed the list, the units we picked, why we picked them, What you could slot in there instead. We will talk about strengths and weaknesses, matchups. Then we'll even have like some battle report style things where we take some photos of our games, looking at deployment. We explain why we deployed the way we did, and go from there. So if you want to see more of those list spotlight videos, then feel free to go back to our Lords of the Storm video, check which lists you want to see, and let us know. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.